Hi, I'm Jim Tanaka, and I'm sort of representing a group here, Matt Pierce, Marnie Bartlett, Javier, and Bob Schultz. This talk's going to be a bit of a smorgasbord. What I'll try to do is trace the journey that some of us have taken with this Let's Face It program, which is a program directed and targeted at kids with autism to improve their face recognition skills. It was great to hear Paula's talk because I think Fast Forward is a blueprint for us, and I'd be very interested in discussing with you and with Bill kind of ways of sort of moving forward. But we've definitely taken the poor man's approach to this. All right, so the research, and so I'll talk about research, intervention, and dissemination. So we start out with the idea that essentially everybody's an expert at face recognition, okay? So if you think about a face, we glean lots of information from a face. In that single object, you can detect the expression or the emotional state of the person, their eye gaze. And if you're from Canada, you might recognize some of these people as Canadian celebrities. Okay, so sorry. Well, he's coming to Canada, or he was going, or he was in Canada. Okay, yeah, we're gonna adopt him because, you know, we have Harper, and I don't know. It's a little scary. Okay, so that face carries so much information that we're able to glean in a single glance. So most of us are face experts, but I think there's been lots of good evidence now to suggest kids with autism have selective deficits in their face processing. I think it's important to point out this is of all kids with autism, but a large proportion of kids have these sort of face recognition deficits. So they have deficits in processing eye gaze, facial identity, and deficits in processing facial expressions. So that's pretty much the state of the research, and we were about ready to launch an intervention. But we really wanted to know, okay, they have these sort of deficits in competency, but we're interested in the underlying processes. So in a recent paper with Julie Wolf, this is really a nice study, because what we were able to do, we developed this Let's Face It skills battery. It's really directed at trying to understand the underlying processes of face processing. And with Julie was exquisitely matched the kids in terms of chronological age and IQ. So then we could start looking at, okay, what are the deficits that kids with autism might have? And we were able to come up with a good set of descriptions that might differentiate kids with autism from typically developing children. And the first is they had difficulties of recognition across changes in expression, views, and also features. So anytime we change from study to test, so in this particular measure, you get a target face, and then you have to simply match the identity across these changes in expression, or here's one across viewpoint, and here's one where we change the critical features by masking. And the general pattern was one of this. So in the white bars are the typically developing kids, and now remember these are matched for both IQ and chronological age. And the kids with autism consistently underperformed across these measures. So that was some clue that the kids with autism are doing something different than typically developing kids. We also have this, what we call parts and wholes test. You get a study face, and then you have to match the parts that went to the study face. So this is forced choice or a place in the whole face test. Now, earlier works showed that kids with autism have difficulty in this holistic analysis, but in fact, in this particular battery, that's not what we found. We found just overall, kids with autism had difficulty with the eyes. Okay, so regardless whether those eyes were presented in isolation or in the whole face, so here's typically developing kids where they do better with eyes than mouth. The kids with autism did reliably worse on the eyes than the typically developing kids. Now, critically, they performed as well with the mouth features. So there's a building evidence to suggest that kids with autism have this deficits in eye processing. And probably a better subtest to get at this is what we call the same different dimensions task. And I don't know if you can see here is that what we do is we have two faces, and the kids are just simply asked to say whether they're the same or different. And this particular pair of faces, the faces differ in terms of the eyes, the distances of the eyes, so that these eyes are closer together than these eyes. So that would be a different response. And here, the difference is in the size of the mouth. So that's a featural difference. So we were looking at both possible differences in sort of what we call configural or spatial discriminations, sort of the distances between the features, or the features themselves, in this case, the size of the eyes or the size of the mouth. The consistent finding was that kids with autism, again, had deficits in the eyes, regardless of whether the differences were represented as differences in the spatial distances or in terms of the features, where, again, they perform equivalent to their age-matched controls on featural or configural mouth discriminations. Okay, so the final test is like, well, maybe kids with autism have just a perceptual deficit. Okay, maybe they just, and for some reason it shows itself more in the eyes than the mouth. Well, an argument against that is we had a very similar task, except instead of faces, we used houses. And so we could either change here the distances between the windows or here the size of the big windows. And the really interesting finding here is that the kids with autism on this particular task outperformed the typically developing kids. So that they're, and this again seems consistent with the notion of kids with autism are sort of hyper-specific learners. So they're able to make these fine-level perceptual discriminations on non-face objects. So the conclusions here then were children with autism have more difficulty establishing what we call view and expression invariant face representations. So they had some difficulty sort of establishing a sort of a 3D whole face memory that is either view or expression invariant. Also, they have deficits in the eye region. So that extracting information from the eyes seems to be differentially impaired. And importantly, the kids with autism are better than typically developing children at discriminating the fine details of houses. So again, suggesting that the perceptual capacities are intact. All right, so this kind of gives us a profile of what kids with autism look like in terms of their face processing deficits. Now, the question that we addressed is, can you take sort of that profile and develop some sort of intervention to perhaps give face expertise to this population of face novices? Well, a lot of this work was based on the expertise, perceptual expertise literature, and first sort of important work in this area was done by Gatte and Tarr, where they had these sort of Griebel, you know, objects, and what Isabel and Mike did was trained up subjects to make these discriminations, and you get improved discrimination, changes in fusiform gyrus, and lots of things that we would typically or previously people had associated with face processing. So you can train up sort of expertise, and then we've also applied this sort of protocol to training up owls and wading birds, and Tim talked a bit about that. And then most recently, Sophie Liebert and colleagues and Laura Pierce and I have been training up other race face recognition using the same sort of expertise protocol. So you know, it's pretty well established that we have difficulty recognizing other race faces. And so we said, well, okay, can you train that up? And in fact, you can, just following essentially the Griebel training paradigm. Okay, so here's the million-dollar question. Applying an expertise framework, can we train up face processing skills in children with autism? All right, so this is really different, right? I mean, unlike university students where you can bring them into the lab and pay them money or give them Psych 100 credit, you can't really do that with kids with autism. So we developed this Let's Face It program, which essentially is a computer-based program that addresses these face processing skills, and it logs the kids' performance. And you know, this is really challenging because you're competing with all the other things that the kids do during their in their day, like playing, you know, Xbox or soccer or whatever, listening to iPods. But we were able to sort of convince and cajole mostly the parents to have their kids play this the Let's Face It for 20 hours a day. Or sorry, 20 hours a week, no, 20 hours in total. Yeah, no, that would have been, that reminds me of George's, you know, five-hour training. No. I'm glad you're listening. anyway, okay, so here are our results, and I'll say it wasn't a home run. It was probably an opposite field single or something, that we got compared, this is a good experiment from a randomized clinical trial, because it was truly a randomized clinical trial, and that we had a baseline control group, a waitlist group, and where we got the biggest gain is in this part whole identity measure. So that I'm collapsing over conditions, but what you can see is the active group who played the Let's Face at 20 hours. Showed a reliable improvement in their ability to recognize, it was our biggest improvement was in the eye region, but they also improved actually in the mouth region as well. Okay, so that's kind of the take-home message from the intervention. And sort of thinking about this, what are the ways that we could make this thing better? Where we got promising effects, enough to sort of think that, you know, this, we're on the right track, but obviously there are elements missing. And first of all, I mean, we're using static images that is much like a video game where you have these static single frame faces that you're manipulating. So no temporal dynamics, okay? Sad face. Passive engagement. So the kids were just like in a video game. You're playing this game, but the level of involvement is not fully engaged as we would like. And finally, I didn't report the null results, but we'd found no effects on facial recognition. One of the aspects of Let's Face It is we actually have two modules for each game. One module that addresses facial identity, recognizing who the face is, and the other one of recognition. And we got no improvement on the expression modules. Okay, so that was sort of the end of our story, and then we had the first all-hands meeting, and this is when, I still remember this, when Marnie got up there and demoed this CERT program, right? Because here was a case where she was in front of a computer, and it was actively recording her facial muscles, which, and the real sort of elegance of the CERT, the Computer Expression Recognition Toolbox, is the way it's designed. It goes along the Ekman action unit. So Paul Ekman, I'm sure we all know, has looked at facial expressions and has analyzed it in terms of the different muscle groups. And so he can describe any sort of facial expression in terms of what he calls these action units just by these combinations. And that's how Marty and her colleagues trained up CERT. So that was really cool. The way it works is you get the video capture input that then relayed to Rubius, which is really, is from what I can tell, the real engine behind this, because it takes that input and CERT makes a request to Rubius that essentially, as through like a handshake, passes that data over to CERT, which is analyzed, which is passed back to Rubius. So it's this very sort of fast dynamic interaction that happens that makes this whole thing, the CERT, work. And from our point of view, the only thing that was really missing in this was some sort of front end. And so what we did at Victoria, Matt Pierce, developed a game called Smile Maze, which would then sort of now engage the user to use that information that does the expression analysis, but put it into a game format, okay? And then also complete the loop with the video capture. So, you know, this is always risky, but here we go. I'm gonna try a live demo of this. And it worked yesterday. So it means it won't work today. But one of the things that we were really impressed with CERT, it's how robust it is. Okay, so there I am. That seems to be working. And notice that this is done under low lighting conditions. So for those of us who are really interested in sort of implementation, it's really, you know, this is such a good thing because it means you don't need special lighting or anything to make this thing work. So let's see if I can make this thing work. Oh, sorry. Let me see. Okay, so so now what I'm going to do is crank up. Smile Maze. It's okay. We think. We'll see if it's okay. All right. So here's Smile Maze, and basically it's Pac-Man themed, okay? So this is my little guy, and I navigate through this maze picking up candies, but then when I encounter these little guy, the smiley token, he's a barrier. And so now to remove him, I'm supposed to smile. Damn. Oh, it does work. I am such a happy guy. okay, so that's Smile Maze, and some of you might have had a chance to play it last night at the poster session. Oops. So you just kind of navigate your way around. And so you get this feedback, which is really, Matt came up with this smile-o-meter, but it's actually even kind of like an avatar, because notice he gets happier as I get happier or something. Okay, so that's Smile Maze, but we needed a control for that. Thank you. This is Matt and Marnie and her. Okay, Angry Maze, okay? You know, some of us need assertive training. Here's the, and you know, it can work. Okay. So again, you can sort of get this. Oops, worse. And then you just kind of, I should get some candy. And then, okay, so, you know, again, this is really a demo. I mean, this was not something. And then finally, the next, just to kind of give you a sense of, here's a happy, angry maze. which is really harder than, you know, than it looks. Okay. So that was kind of the first step in all this, and we thought, great, you know, good, we got it working. But there was a number of questions that we wanted to see sort of the face validity of CERT in a sense of we can attach EMG electrodes to our user, our player, and to see whether it conforms to the CERT output. So here, and we know that zygomaticus major is the sort of your smiling muscle, and corrugator supercilii is your frowning, and so those are the two main muscles in those for angry and happy. And so what you can see here, this is a smile detector. Actually, this is an ensemble of AU units, and this is what CERT is saying, and this is what the EMGs are picking up. So good, you know, and also notice that the corrugator is fairly silent. We did also record from obiculeos oculi, and it was somewhere in between. And similar results for the angry. Okay, so good correspondence between EMG and CERT. All right, well, we wanted to take it one step farther. We know that there are physiological correlates to emotions, and we wanted to see if playing smile maze or angry maze induces changes in these physiological correlates. So the typical setup here is we have a baseline, so we get baseline measures of heart rate and skin conductance. Then the participant will play smile maze, and then return to a baseline, and then angry maze. Okay, and basically, I mean, we did get change. So these are changes relative to the baseline. And here's heart rate. You get accelerated heart rate after playing angry maze more than happy maze. Both are above baseline. Now, looking, I'm pretty new to the physiological literature, and most of the studies I've looked at, you get changes in kind of these physiological measures, but they're not really finely tuned to disambiguating the different emotions. But this is only with seven subjects. And again, this is a production task, right, where most studies are looking at perception. Also, we're getting changes in skin conductance, again, elevated skin conductance when doing angry. That was by level, so that's after playing a level of smile maze or a level of angry maze. One area that might be promising is we can actually do event-related skin conductance. It's a little tricky because you can see the onset occurs well over a second after, for example, you encounter that smile token, and its rise time is a good 2 or 3 seconds. So that would mean that in order to sort of let the sort of that initial skin response decay, we'd have to have our smile tokens or angry tokens at least, you know, 6 or 7 seconds apart. That would probably significantly alter gameplay. So, but it's just sort of interesting to think about. Okay, the other one, the obvious other measure is self-report, because it's been speculated that actually producing a smile elevates your mood or increases your mood. So there's a lot of kind of silly experiments out there in the literature. It's like if you walk around with a pencil under your lip like this, sort of activating a zygomaticus, you're actually going to be happier person. Okay, so when you're ever depressed, you know, put a pencil in your lips. You'll be better. So here what we see is after, and it is true, I don't, again, if you had a chance or if you want to play Smile Maze or Angry Maze It's later on, we'll be happy to show it to you. But, you know, people, it does make people happier. And we're getting a little bit of that. This is, we're using the PANAS measure. It's a self-report measure of mood. So we get an increased positive mood and no change in negative mood. The interesting thing is actually we got bigger effects for playing angry, because angry not only decreased your positive mood, it boosted your negative affect as well. So that's a little problem. We always counterbalance things. Well, we try to make people, you know, make sure they're happy when they leave the lab. So, okay, so there, this just opens the door for so many really interesting questions, and that, I mean, CERT is just amazing, right? So we can ask questions as, do children with autism perceive and produce dynamic facial expressions differently than typically developed? Because that literature is pretty messy. There's some studies that suggest that kids with autism actually have deficits in production of facial expressions. And so we can sort of, we can look at that. And we can also look at dynamic perception. We can look at these physiological correlates. So you might think that they would be some indicator of empathy. So there might be something interesting where the kids that play SMAMEs with autism might not necessarily show the same changes in the skin conductance and heart rate as typically developing kids. And then finally, if there are deficits, can they be remedied through training? So this all is kind of headed towards a treatment paradigm. There's some really subtle aspects to CERT that make this really important for an intervention. It's and that is the input, because in CERT, the input is the face, right? So it's not keyboard. It's not. I mean, you can use the keyboard to maneuver your Pac-Man, but it's really the face that's the input. And so one of the things we're thinking about doing is being able to store the expressions to a file so a child can record his or her parents, sibs, friends, while doing their different expressions, have a video gallery of expressions that are analyzed by CERT. So again, lots of possibilities here. Okay, I'll just cruise through this because I know you're as hungry as I am. Dissemination. So how do we kind of get this stuff out there? And as Paula said, dissemination is probably 10 times harder than the research. I think we're all kind of, we're used to doing research. We know how to do this. Intervention for us is just this, you know, we do training all the time. We know how, but how do you, you know, even if you get, you know, modest results, you'd like to make them available to people. So we have a website, and kind of following Bill's model here, but since we're still beginners at this, people can go to the website, download the Let's Face It program, either Mac version or Windows, free, and try it out at home. So we're starting, and we're just now starting to advertise it. The hits are increasing, and so that's one way to sort of get it out there. And that's why we're passing out those flyers. If you know anybody who wants to download it, feel free. We'd love feedback on that as well. Also at our website, I mean, we're thinking of this as a curriculum in face processing. So on the website, we've developed a manualized hands-on exercises that are in PDF format that people, teachers, clinicians, parents can download. And they're sort of all in one. That is, you just need the PDF and print it out, and you should be good to go. We're also beginning to do teacher workshops. We have our first one coming up in April. We're starting to make the rounds in the autism conferences. Okay, that's Let's Face It and insert the final 3 minutes here. I just wanted, this is kind of like a commercial. this is kind of in reach, outreach, everywhere reach. Science meets science education. Okay, so because I'm a researcher and I'm interested in expertise and been focusing on adult expertise, I'm really also interested in developmental expertise in kids. Now, for any of us who've had this interest You know the challenges of trying to work with school boards, superintendents, principals, teachers, all the way down the road, down the line, because you know kids are busy. They don't have time to do your experiments as much. So we wanted to do a developmental study, and I had an honor student who was really keen to do this, and she says, I know what we'll do. We'll you know, instead of they have these soccer camps and you know music camps, we'll have a face camp. And so I said, okay, we'll do this. And so because we wanted to get a pretty good age span, we the first summer we had three camps. The first one was for 7 to 8, and then 9 to 10, and 11 to 12. And it's a lot of fun. And so basically the kids have a good time, and then we also collect data. And we call it face camp because if we called it data collection camp, I don't think anybody would come. So here's a little snippet. Kids come for the whole day, and we do fun face activities, and we have almost more volunteers than kids. Typically, we get anywhere from 30 to 40 kids attend each camp session, so that's 30 subjects per age group. And at the end of the day, we're always taking pictures of all their activities. And then we have like an ending slideshow. So I just took a little snippet here of this slideshow, actually, that my daughter put together for us. And so this will give you a flavor of face camp. And pay attention, because I'm going to make a pitch afterwards. Okay, so that's face camp, and we put together one of those after each camp. That's our closing ceremonies. We invite the parents back in. They can see what the kids have done during the day, you know. All right, and so part of what we do, you know, there was that face lab, and that's where we collect data. And one of the things that I've done is sort of opened up FaceCamp to researchers who have interest in developmental questions, and Maggie Shiffard actually came out the first time and did some pretty cool experiment on biological motion. Susie Scherf from CMU, she's a TDLC trainee fellow. So actually she got some money from TDLC to come out to Victoria in the summertime and collect data. And I think she had a good time. And then Janet Sal came out, and well, she didn't. Jenna didn't come out, but she actually sent us her experiment, and we ran it for her. But she was looking at hemispheric differences in development in face processing, got some really good results. So I just want to extend that invitation to you. That is, if you have an interesting sort of developmental study that is nice and short, no more than 20 minutes, maybe we can work something out. Okay, so that's it. Just want to thank all the people that are involved, Sean Butler, Laura Dixon, and Glenn, and Jacob, and folks at the Machine Perception Lab. Thanks. Question.
So you said that there was no improvement of facial expression.
Right.
And what was the intervention for that? That was just
it was the same, actually. I didn't show, we had in the games, there are also expression games. So a really good one would be recognizing the same expression across different identities. Or trying to guess the emotion from either seeing just the eyes or the mouth. And, and also we had a series of tests that measure expression. And we didn't come up
so
with
those
anything.
Those are all recognition. What about your game where you actually ask them to make the expression, right?
Well, I mean, we didn't have any measures like that, right? Because in the first, let's face it, it's just static, no engagement. But that with CERT, that's exactly the sort of thing we can address. Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah.
Hi. I have a question. The work of Ralph Adolphs, who studies people with amygdala damage, they also show impairments in figuring out the emotions where what happens is they don't pick up the eye, what's going on with the eyes, they tend to focus on the mouth. And when they did eye tracking in these individuals, it turned out they weren't really even looking at the eyes.
Right.
So to what extent can the impairment seen with people kids with autism be ameliorated just by having them look at the eyes and rewarding that behavior,
That's an excellent question. You also see that with prosopagnosic patients. They tend not to look at the eyes. I think for kids with autism, it's completely sensible that they don't look at eyes if they have an aversion to kind of social engagement. So I think this raises some interesting questions as to the almost the ethics of treatment. That is, if the eyes are aversive to kids with autism, is the right treatment then to kind of force them to look at the eyes? Where we know the work from the Davidson group shows that when you force them to look at the eyes, you get a really big burst of skin conductance, so which tells you there's something going on there emotionally. So I'm not, I'm on the fence. I mean, I think that's why I like the CERT stuff, right? Because, and I actually like the idea of face processing, because most treatments in autism, have these social, emotional, workshops or skills. And if we just start with the face and kind of, get kids to focus on the face, then, everything else is kind of, you've sort of diffused sort of the social aspects. But with CERT, too, you can imagine where you can make it really kind of fun for the kids to, furrow their brow for an anger in a way that's not going to be aversive, perhaps.